Welcome to the All Things Blues and Southern Rock Podcast. A Southern Storm of bold, liberating rock, shot through with blues, soul, and gospel. And now, your hosts for the show, Brian Jones and Jason Johannes.
Welcome to another episode of the All Things Blues and Southern Rock Podcast on Pantheon Podcast, where you can go to find your most preferred genre, style of music podcast. Hopefully that's us. And Jason is here to agree with that. And what else? What else is going on?
I like it. I'm here to agree with that.
Well, I figured you could agree with that.
Of course I agree with that. It's just funny.
We wrote that out in the script before. Like, you have to say this.
I just have to say yes to whatever you say. I am here, Brian. And I'm still here. You know, today was April 8th when we're recording the intro, although we did the interview already earlier. The eclipse happened, and you and I are both still here.
Eclipse apocalypse. How much of the eclipse did you see in your part of this country?
Central Ohio, we were in one of the best, not the best, but close to it. And we had about 3.5 minutes of totalitarity of the moon eclipsing the sun. It was awesome. Got dark.
Were you at home when this was going on, or?
I was at home because apparently everybody at my place of employment decided not to be at the office today. So at lunchtime, I went home, and then our friends live on a big piece of property and had people over there. So I was over there with people. I was taking phone calls for work, but watching the eclipse happen at the same time.
I'm just curious, because I'm wondering, like dogs, like our dog, when it gets dark, she wants to go to bed. So yeah. I wonder if dogs like, hey man, it's time to go to sleep.
We had our dog with us. She's a little older. She was sleeping on one of like the couches they had outside on their front porch thing. So she didn't bug her at all. She just laid there because she's old.
She's sleeping because she sleeps a lot, right?
That's right. Yeah. Nothing changed. But when it got dark, you could hear the birds get quieter, and then the bullfrogs came out a little bit because these people have a pond at their house, and it was pretty interesting. You know, if you had a light that comes on when it gets dark, they had a light on one of the poles by their pond. It came on. It was really cool.
That's like the rest of the animal kingdom. I'm curious as how it affects them.
Yeah. It was interesting. You know, I didn't see anything too crazy, but I'm sure some craziness went on, but we're still here.
Yeah. Usually we talk about some sort of music news or whatever's going on this week, but this definitely qualifies. From Ian Claus, Ian Rice, I've got a box here of, I don't know what's inside, and I also don't have like a knife or something, but I got a pen.
But don't hurt yourself. Well, the good thing about Ian and David and the State of America crew is you're part of their Patreon, which you should join. They always send stuff out to you. And I know recently Ian Claus has been sending things out to everybody and trying to tie things back to kind of geographically where you may be. So I'm very interested, Brian, to see what you have coming out of that box, because I know what I just got from Ian Claus.
Well, if the listeners can hear, I'm like opening up the box and seeing what's all in here. Okay, what do we got?
What do we got?
Well, first is like the little card, whatever. Let's open this first. I want the surprise in here, and then it is Black Crowes Instant Live, August 7th, 2006, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Very cool. And everybody was still in the band then.
Yeah. Mark Ford, Eddie. Oh, Eddie and Mark were both still there.
Yeah.
So that's from Boa's collection.
Right, collection. Yeah.
So they inherited that from Boa's surviving family members or friends when he died. And so Ian and David have been going through and sending his Boa's personal stash Instant Live to people. I have a show from 2006 from Cleveland.
Okay. Cool. Thank you, Ian Claus from the State of America. We call him Ian Claus because he's like Santa
Always
Claus.
Sending gifts. That's right. And mine is 728-06 from Cleveland.
728-06, you said?
728-06, yep.
728-06.
What's your date?
8/07, August 7th,
You.
2006.
Okay. All right. Not too long. Just a little bit. 10 days after that show, Brian.
And we truly
Sure.
appreciate you joining in the fun as we press play on the Happiness Bastards for the first time. It's events like these that really illustrate just how wonderful the SOA community has grown to be. State of America is the SOA. Thank you for being a part of our Patreon and for doing all the wonderful things you do. All the best, David and Ian. Thank you, fellas. That was awesome.
Nothing but class, those two, for real.
Indeed.
Well,
So,
this week, Brian, we got an across the pond episode.
yeah, across the pond to
It's been a while.
talk to rambling preachers.
Yeah, in Ramblin' Preacher. How did we go across the? Oh, yes, one of the PR people that we use, I think, with. Who was it? Doomsday Outlaw or somebody hooked us up with Ramblin' Preachers. They have their debut full-length record coming out. Great sound, blue that Southern rock, blues rock thing that's really taking the storm over in England. And cool dudes, man. Cool dudes, cool record. The record just came out actually last Friday, so it was good to talk with them before actually the release of the record.
Yeah, and like you said, there's a just such a great scene over there, and the people really show how much they embrace the music, embrace the rock and roll, and they got a great Southern rock scene going on over there. A lot of, good bands doing that. You mentioned Doomsday Outlaw, so Ramblin' Preachers is right there with them, and it's cool. I like when we talk about bands from the States here that go over there, and they always tell us like how they make them feel like they're the Beatles, no matter who it is.
And they really, that style of music is super popular over in Europe. And obviously now you have these European bands, British bands, who are taking on that sound too because of the popularity. And I just love it, man. And I do dig that album, Sins and Virtues. It just came out on Friday. What date was that? That was the fourth, Friday the fourth, right?
Yeah. For sure. Well, you guys kick back and relax and listen to our awesome conversation with Ramblin' Preachers.
I'm tired of walking on eggshells. Yes, I don't see what you see. God, I'm a bad guy. You don't see no good in me. Can't see the do you right from wrong. I'm only human after all. While I'm climbing up mountains, you're here embracing the fall.
We're at the guest segment of the podcast. You guys know I always throw it over to Jason to introduce our great guests today.
And I'm excited to have our guests on all the way from across the pond, Brian. They're calling us from England. We've got Ross. We have James from the Ramblin' Preachers. How's it going, guys?
We're Hello. Good.
Yeah, we're very good. Thanks for having us on.
Did somebody say cold?
No. It is cold. Yeah. It is cold at the moment. Still. Like I
Well, I
said,
mean, it's
like I
early
said, the sun
March.
will come.
Wait, hold on a second. The sun's going to come in. Listen, England, there's sun.
We like to dream, okay? Leave us to it.
What is the sunny? What is the most sunny time of the year for you guys?
July through to, well, about June through to
End of
end
August,
of
September
September.
June 1st to June 5th. That's it. That's the only sun you guys get.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Now, June till September is usually all right.
Yeah. All right.
This time of the year is just wet and cold and never stops raining, and then the end of the year is just freezing cold all the time.
That sounds just like here. I'm in like the no North Dakota, like northern United States, right in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, our version of cold and your version of cold are very, very
Yeah.
different. I mean,
Brian's by Canada, so that's kind of how.
Yeah, right below Canada. We're like Canada South.
Yeah, I read, I think it was my dad was telling me that like last year in Canada, it was like minus 64 or something like that.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, which is absolutely, imagine that. Imagine going outside and that'd be horrible.
Oh, I've been there.
But the good thing is about you guys is you're playing a style of music that's known to the South, particularly Southern United States. You guys have this really, this blues rock, Southern rock thing going on, you know, with the band.
Yeah.
We love it.
Yeah. Thank you. We're glad. It's one nerve wracking thing is it's like, it's quite obvious what we're trying to do, but it's like, I hope all the American people don't think we're just trying to rip everyone off.
Well, Brian, the Americans rip everybody else off. Like, that's the whole thing, you know? I mean, come on.
Right.
Yeah.
The Stones ripped off Delta, you know, Mississippi Blues for a while. And, you know, Led Zeppelin did also Delta Blues. And then we had bands in the 80s that ripped off Led Zeppelin and the Stones. So it's like, it's a circle.
It goes full circle. Yeah. And as you said, like, we'd be lying if we said that we weren't influenced by pretty much all the main kind of American bands, especially from that south part, and you know, towards Nashville, a bit more southeast. You know, everyone. We could talk about Black Rye Smoke, people like that. They're everything we do.
What, these guys,
exactly. There you go.
There we go.
We need to get one of those. We've got no Black Rye Smoke merch, so we need to get hold of some.
You're coming to the UK and Europe.
We got tickets as soon as the day they were released.
I want the what is it, the number plate with BB Smoke on the back of it?
Oh, yeah, yeah, the license plate.
Love that.
That's so cool. I've not seen that.
Oh, yeah, you guys pointing at Brian's license plate.
Brian's one. Yeah. I love that.
I'm about to see them on the 15th.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
band called Them Dirty Roses is opening, and they're really good.
I really like them. I was listening to like Black Rye Smoke and people like that, and they were one of the ones that kind of jumped on after. So you know, you kind of get that, like, if you like these people, you like these people. Yep. They've got some really cool songs.
Yeah, we're really lucky as well, because when we see them in this country later in the year, the Stillwoods are supporting them,
right?
And both me and James are really big Stillwoods fans.
Awesome. Well, yeah. Right? I saw the Steelwoods in December with Them Dirty Roses opening.
Yeah, they're a killer band. There's just such a good sound to that band. And the singer of that band's wicked as well.
Yeah.
I really like their new album as well. That's really good.
So what's your humble beginnings in music, and then how did this band come together?
Where do you want to start? From the very beginning?
From the very beginning, from when you're the twinkle in your father's eye to where we got here now.
that's sort of where it all started for me. It was my dad never really played an instrument, but he never, but he always listened to really good music. Like, he always had music playing. I was always brought up with like Bon Jovi and AC/DC, ELO, Phil Collins, Genesis, other things, a band called Big Country from this country that you might
know. Big Country, like the kind of the new wave. Those guys are great.
Yeah, so I used to listen to that. I'm just trying to think of things I used to listen to in his car, like all the time. Thin Lizzy, Gary Moore, like all that stuff.
Oh, Gary Moore, man, tremendous. What a player.
Yeah, we was listening the other day. Gary Moore, such a great guitar player. Who else? I'm trying to think of a few others. Obviously, we had the Beatles and all the normal ones. But yeah, I was just always brought up on that. And then my dad used to know a guy who was like a ragtime player when I lived in Cornwall when I was born. And he gave him like an acoustic guitar as a gift for me for doing a job that he'd done, something probably plastering a wall or something. And I had that when I was like about 3 years old or something. Obviously I never really played it as of such. I dibbled around with it. And then as I got older and went to school and stuff, a couple of my friends had guitars and stuff. And I just got into, I just sort of thought that, oh yeah, that's cool. I might have a little play with that. But I don't think I ever really got into playing seriously until I was much older, until I was at least in my like eight, till I was about 18, 19, when I was like really interested in just joining bands and stuff, and I just wanted to play. But yeah, I've just sort of, I never really paid much attention to like all the theory of guitars and things. I never really paid much attention to like singing lessons and everything else. And I have more now. Now we gig a lot more and everything else. I sort of find like vocal coaches and stuff. I know a couple over here now that they're good for teaching me how to like condition my voice and how to look after it when in like down times and leading up to shows. So that's always been really helpful. But yeah, like I said, I didn't really massively get into guitar playing as a whole until I was probably about 18, 19, when I sort of felt like I had to play. And yeah, never since then, I've just sort of never really put it down and just buy and sell guitars and always looking for the next thing to buy and everything else. So that's sort of the standard for me. But yeah.
Yeah, I think from my side it was a bit of a different one, really. I mean, being that little bit younger, and my dad being a bit younger than your dad, my dad very much was a kid of the 80s and grew up on 80s music. So a lot of my childhood was listening to people like Spandau Ballet and Duran Duran and, Pet Shop Boys and Tears for Fears, and they're all great bands.
New wave music, Brian.
New romantic, new wave.
Teenage years as well.
Yeah, I mean, it was great. I used to, and I still do love all that music. But then obviously he also got into like, the more guitar based stuff. So again, Gary Moore, Dire Straits, Guns N' Roses, Bon Jovi, all those kinds of, bands that were massive in the 80s. And I definitely gravitated more towards that than I did the more the pop side of things, as good as it is. I always had this little guitar that I don't know, bought years and years ago when I was a kid, but never played it. My late granddad was the first one to give me an electric guitar, and it was awful, but it gave me a starting point. I've still got the amp somewhere, and it's literally like this big. It's a tiny little thing, but it still works. Maybe one day it will come out. But yeah, I mean, my childhood best friend, he was a great musician, and he was learning to play, and he played piano a lot. And every time I went around his house as a kid, well, I'd say probably about talking about 12, 13 years ago. So it's probably about I was probably about 13, 14 years old. We get together and meet up, and I'd say to him, "Look, can we play the piano?" Da, da, da. And he's like, "No, I don't want to." And then one day he finally relented and said, "Yeah, okay, fine." So he played everything, and then he just gave me like three or four notes to play with, and it kind of just bloomed from there, really. And then I thought, you know what, I might start playing guitar, and then he can play piano, and I'll play guitar with him. And things just kind of really started to kind of snowball from there. And sooner or later, you're down jam nights playing with people, getting up playing songs you've never heard of, playing with people you never played with, and you suddenly get a bug for it, and then you're down the rabbit hole of buying new equipment. As Ross said, you're always looking for that next thing, whatever that may be, and what you want is never cheap, but it's all part of the fun. So yeah, I mean, slightly different background, but still got us to where we are now.
Well, James and Ross, how did you guys get together to form the Ramblin' Preachers?
Buying music equipment.
Is there a Craigslist equivalent in England? Because we have this thing, it's like an online, you can sell whatever you want called Craigslist.
Well, we have.
Ours is called Gumtree, but no one really uses Gumtree in this country.
It's
It's a
really
better name.
eBay and Facebook Marketplace, really, and
Yeah.
obviously you guys get that as well. So.
But yeah, so it started with, it basically started with I had a guitar amp, which I'd basically sold to James, because
Did
I
you rip
was
him off?
for them.
Did you rip him off? Everything good with
No,
it,
no, no,
James?
no, no. I sold it at a reputable price. Because me and James, like I knew who James was, and I'd seen him at jam nights and everything, but we'd never, and I knew that he was interested, or I knew the type of guitar player he was and everything else. But I play a lot of acoustic, so I'm not really massively, me personally, I'm not really into jam nights because it's just, I just prefer playing acoustic and being attached to something. Also, I can never keep up with learning all the songs that everyone wants to play, and I'm not playing Sweet Child of Mine ever in my life. I was just like, you know what, I'm not really playing any electric anymore. I'm going to sell my gear. I don't really need it. And then James bought my amp off of me. About 7-8 months to a year went by. And I was like, oh, I sort of want to play a bit of electric again. I might try and pick up a small amp or something. The Fender Bassman had come for sale for a really, really cheap price, like a really good price. And I was like, oh, I really want that. That'll do. It was a bit overpowered for what I actually initially wanted it for, but I was like, for the price, couldn't say no. So I messaged the guy, you know, everything else. But at the same time, James also wanted a Fender Bassman. So he'd also messaged the same guy. And in the end, we ended up saying like, oh, if you don't want it, then I'll have it, So I basically came to the conclusion, I was like, okay, well, if I go and pick it up and buy it, I'll buy my old amp back off of you. So basically I went all the way to London, picked it up, drove all the way back to Milton Keynes, which is about an hour and bits drive. And then James came over the same day. We played the amps and stuff in the kitchen of my old house. And then we decided that we'd just I'd have my old amp back. James was going to have the basement, et cetera, et cetera. But he was playing in a covers band at a pub up the just up the road from me, literally about less than a five minute walk. And I went and watched them. I was like, I'll come and watch you tonight. I was like, you're only around the corner. I'm not doing anything. So I just walked around to the pub. They were playing like AC/DC, While My Guitar Gently Weeps and everything else. And I was like, man, he's such a good guitar player, like really good player. And I was like, oh, he really should. And I was just like, God, what a waste. Like, not what a waste to be playing in covers bands and pubs and stuff. Like, it's got its place and everything else like that. But I was like, he could really be a really good guitar player. I was outside having a cigarette, and the one of our friends, who's a Scottish guy called John, came out, and he was like, oh, he's too good to be playing in these bars and too good for this shit. Like that. And I was like, oh, he should come and play with me. Because I'd played a lot of like solo stuff before with a drummer and stuff. So I'd made loads of contacts in the years before. And at the end of the night, I went up to James and said, like, look, I've got these songs. If you want to come and jam them, I know a drummer, I know a bass player. Like, if you want to come and have a little jam and play some original stuff, come and do it. And yeah, here we are now. So that's sort of how it all came about. So, yeah.
What year was it that officially became kind of the Ramblin' Preachers?
2019?
Yeah, 2019. So we're coming up to 5 years now for our sins.
So yeah. You started the band, and then the global pandemic hit.
Yeah, but we were quite lucky because we still managed to play a couple of shows.
We did
somehow, and one of them was a really good show as well. And it sold. It was in a place called up in Northampton called the Picture Drome, which is basically like an old cinema. It's actually quite a big venue. It holds about sort of 400-500 people, but obviously everything was social distance and everything. But it was coming. It was about October, I think, we played it in. And so there was like social distance and stuff, but we sold it out at like 90 odd tickets or whatever it was allowed in there. And it was a super good show. And we done a couple of, I think we done a live stream thing as well, and a couple of other bits and bobs. But yeah, apart from that, yeah, global pandemic hit and put an end to all our fun.
Richard and Craig, are they the original bass and drummers, or are they these new guys?
So Craig's been in it since the start as well. We've had about
I think Rick's the fourth drummer now, isn't he?
Yeah, drums have been our Achilles heel, unfortunately.
It's like Spinal Tap, just, you know, spontaneous.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Literally, I mean, yeah, it's, you know, we're fortunate we've got Rich now. Rich is a great drummer, and he's a really good person to have in the band. He's probably one of the best things that's kind of happened to the band, because he's helped put some, he's like anchored us down a little bit. As you said, like, drummers have always been an Achilles heel for us, through one reason or another. So we're quite fortunate now that we're in a place where the lineup we have is comfortable. And, you know, we're able to like bounce off each other and actually enjoy each other's company and play some good music and do some really cool shows.
I think a lot of the issue is like the style of music we play, although is sort of small scale popular over here. Like, it's not like a massive thing where you can just call someone up and someone's like Southern rock influenced drummer, or so, like people, it's hard to find drummers that aren't already in bands that want to play what we play. Whether that's not a bad thing, it's just the way that it is over here. But yeah, it's always been really hard. But at least with Rich, he's like one of the drummers we've had where he's quite into like rock music and stuff. He's a massive Genesis fan, as I think most drummers are, to be fair. And then he just got what we were trying to do. He played in a blues band before doing like covers and stuff. He just sort of got it. He's just a really nice person to have in the band as well. Like, he's really, really like calm sort of person. So if you're ever like stressed or anything, or we're all stressing at each other, he's just sort of there like, yeah, well, we don't have to do that. do you know what I mean? Like,
he's got his big hat on that says Peacekeeper across it, and he's the one that keeps us grounded. But yeah, I say it's a comfortable lineup where we are now. Finding a drummer is easy. Finding a good drummer is not so easy. I think that goes for any musician, really. But yeah, we're fortunate that
the good thing about Rich as well is he always wants to improve, and he always wants to learn, and he always wants to take on what someone's saying. So if we're working with a producer or whatever, he'll listen to what the producer has to say, sort of thing, and he'll try and do his absolute best to do what's best for the band, which is all we really ask. Like, I think that's one of the main, most important things in regards to being in a band in general. Like, as long as you're willing to listen to other people who are trying to help you, then hopefully you can't really go wrong.
So far you guys have like a batch of singles. Is there like a record coming or an EP? And do you want to talk about that? Like, when you guys start writing music, and who is it that writes the songs, and where's that going now?
Yeah, so we always thought that we try and do it tactically and not just sort of do an album and just slam it out there like first straight away. We've seen a couple of bands. This is just a personal preference thing. So we started with a couple of singles. Then we was like, we've done a couple more singles, and we was like, people at the shows that we play buy CDs, they buy albums, they like albums, they still like to have a physical thing. And then we got to the point where we was like, you know what, we should really just do an album and like work out what songs are going to go on it and everything else, and work and all this stuff. Because then at least when we go and play, people have something to take away with them. We can make a bit of extra money as well, obviously. And it gives us like something to work towards, if you know what I mean. So we put out four singles, and we done the album, and then we've basically been releasing singles off of the album, which comes out on the 29th of March, which is called Sins and Virtues, which will be our first album. So, and we're really happy with how that's all sounding and what we've done on it. So it's really good.
Yeah, we think we've got it into a good place. As I said, you know, it's our first album. There's things that we would change going forwards, and obviously with second album hopefully on the horizon, we want to take what we've learned from the first one and then develop on from it. And, you know, we've got a clear path now. You know, we had originally had a producer for this album, and then he was a friend of ours, and, you know, he got it to where it was. And then we were fortunate that Wayne Proctor contacted us and wanted to get involved. Wayne's worked with I don't know if you guys are aware of Wayne. He's worked with so many people in the UK kind of blues and rock scene. So, you know, we were really lucky to have him. And obviously moving on to him and then with him and Ollie Brown working with us, hopefully for the second album front to back, that will show a massive development curve from where we are now. So that's the aim. You know, we're happy where we are, but obviously we want to take what we've learned with album one and then put it into album two and, you know, make that even better than our starting point.
And you guys are doing a lot of the modern, kind of the modern thing in music, release a bunch of singles, release one every couple of weeks, about every month leading up to that album. So that's a very, very common thing. And I think it does well too, to get people interested in what's coming out. And it's also a little bit cheaper too, when you're kind of an independent band to kind of run that way. So it's a pretty good business model.
Especially in the recording thing. Cause you don't, I mean, when we done the full album, obviously we recorded a full album, but obviously leading up to it, you haven't got much money, you haven't got much intake, playing as many shows as much as you want to play and everything else. So you basically just you use what you've got and you use it to the best of your abilities. And yeah, we've always thought that we would do a few singles and see how they go, see it, and then to gauge what people sort of like and what they don't like and stuff like that. So
where did you guys end up recording all this music for this album?
Where?
All over the place, wasn't it?
Yeah, we recorded it in quite a few different places. So we recorded the drums were recorded in Rich's studio, because unfortunately, like, as much as we wanted to record it in a massive room in a massive studio, and like we just didn't have the budget for it.
Yeah.
So we recorded all the drums in Rich's little studio, which is where we rehearse, which is about 20 minutes up the road from me and James. And then we recorded all the guitars and bass and most of the vocals in one of my friend's studios, which is like a converted barn, which has got a really cool vibe to it. The studio is called Fool's Gold Studios. It's just like a little outhouse of a farm. But it's got like lovely like rafter beams in it. It's not like high or anything, but it's just a really nice little like vibe in there. And they've got like funky carpets all over the floor and rugs and hippie rugs everywhere. And it's just one of them. So it's got like a nice vibe.
Yeah, it's a good sounding room as well.
Yeah, it sounds good in there too. Yeah, meant we could crank the amps and stuff if we needed to, and
Led Zeppelin, because they recorded all those old, you know, estates and manor house, like all these different types of places to get a really good sound.
And then obviously and then I finished the vocals and the overdubs and stuff were done at our other producer's house up in London as well. So just went and stayed there for a few days and got them all done, so which was also fun.
I was kind of surprised to hear you say like that the kind of the southern flavored southern rock blues kind of rock there. You said there wasn't as much of that going on because we talked to so many artists. So maybe from our viewpoint, it seems like that. But is that in certain place like around where you guys are, or where there's not as much? Or
we tend to find that our music is or blues rock. You know, everything that we do and the circuit that we're on tend to be more northern focused. So the north of England seem to accept that music a bit more, and they celebrate it a lot more. We, you know, the crowds and the gigs that we play tend to be further up north than they are where we are, which is kind of in the middle. And then obviously towards London. London's a bit of an interesting beast. Obviously London is very diverse and very different in the way that it approaches things, but trying to break London is a very challenging goal. So yeah, definitely I would say where we are, the northern territories of the UK are more celebrating of what we're trying to do.
Brian's right. We've talked to some artists from the UK, some artists from the US, you know, and they seem to do well, but certainly in specific parts. We found out, surprisingly, I don't know if it was Mike Ross or Dave O'Grady or who told us, Brian, but they're actually British hillbillies like we would have in the States, like, you know, Southern. Is that true? You got hillbillies in England?
But describe what you mean as a hillbilly, like, like a traveler.
like somebody who lives in the hills is very rural country folk, you know?
Yeah, I suppose you do get a few people that are very into their town, if you know what I mean. They don't have that town. People that come into that town are outsiders, and yeah, you do get that a little bit, but I don't think it's like what you guys.
It's not on the same level.
I think it was Mike Ross who said that. If I remember correctly, he's been on a couple times. Well, how do you guys? I mean, what brings you guys into this genre? Again, the Southern rock, blues, bass, rock music. Because again, you know, it's popular certain geographic places in the U.S. But again, interesting to find that in England, and you guys kind of deciding to go in that direction.
I think we just. I think when we started the band, we was like, I really want to play like traditional blues music. And then after about a month of playing traditional blues music, we realized that wasn't really what we wanted to be doing. I mean, it was just like, we just like big, like a big sound. Like it's just, it's fun. People enjoy it. People enjoy the key of A.
Key of A is great, man. You know, A's gotten a lot of people a lot of money.
Yeah, and we just like I said, we just had so much influence that was more American based. And me and James listened to more stuff over there. And again, even since the band started, our taste has got more and more. Now the band's into a more serious state. We definitely listen to music and absorb music a lot differently to what I probably was even a couple of years ago. I don't know what it is. There's something about like the culture to it, the storytelling in the songs as well. But they don't seem to, like in the people that we listen to, they don't seem like cheesy. They all seem to have like a message in them. And I just really enjoy that. And there's bands over here that have got like stuff like that as well. But I think, and it's just nice to, I don't know. It's just nice to listen to. Like there's a band over here at the moment that we're really good friends with called These Wicked Rivers.
They have a new album just came out, right?
Yeah, their new album came out. We love them boys, but but all their songs have got like, they're really powerful, a really good sound, and yeah, it's quite not like the lyrics are good, and everything else. The guitar solos are good, it's really hard to work, it's hard to work out why we've gone for that sort of thing, but other than that's just our preference of what we like. So
I think some of it as well comes from, you know, obviously we're very guitar focused.
Two guitars,
we are massive guitar nerds, as you'll find most musicians probably are, and exactly.
Nice special.
Yeah, I'm taking the special.
I was playing it right before you guys, we got on to do this interview.
So obviously, you know, a lot of, you know, we naturally play Fenders and Gibsons and a lot of Fender amps, and it's a very American sound. And when we were doing gigs, people would be like, oh, you sound just like Blackberry Smoke or just like Blackstone Cherry. And then the more you listen to it, it's like, there's nothing wrong with that. When sometimes people get offended if you say, oh, you sound like this band. We didn't, and we listened to them. It was like, Blackberry Smoke are awesome. They're literally one of the best bands in the world in loss of mine eyes. So there's nothing wrong with that. And then you're down the rabbit hole of everyone else. You know, we've always been, Ross will tell you, he's a massive Jason Isbell fan. We're both huge Chris Stapleton fans. And then you very quickly go... D18 is there. I've always been a John Mayer fan, so I've always liked that style of music as well. But you get down, you go, oh, who produces all them? And it's all Dave Cobb. And then you go down the repertoire of who's used Dave Cobb as a producer, and it's basically just a list of all the best bands you would listen to. So there's obviously something in his his sonic delivery of music that really sits with us. And we just went down that rabbit hole and never looked back, really.
It feels real what the American bands do. Even for us, like we have to sometimes try and force out like a sound that we want to do. But they can just do it. And it's complicated for us because the Americans have like this big have this ability to be able to use all these cool words, which we can't really use. Like you can use a word like highway and nickel and dime. It's just sound, but if we were to use the word like pound and penny, motorway, it's just not anywhere near as cool. So yeah, sometimes you have to tread the
line. What do you call a pickup truck? What's a pickup truck?
A truck is a pickup truck.
It's a truck, it's okay, all right.
Still a truck, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we still, but yeah, you've got pickup.
Do people buy pickup trucks in England? Like, is that a thing? Yeah,
yeah. I love pickup trucks, but okay. The trouble is they're too big for English roads.
Yeah.
So, you know, you think, I went to America 2 years ago and you see a pickup truck in the UK and then you go over to America and it's like twice the size. And yeah, it's like, there's no way you're fitting that in a car park anywhere or driving down the country road.
You guys have all your cities and towns built like centuries before the automobile. We built our cities around automobiles being created. Yeah. You know, that's the difference. Yeah.
Dave Grohl used motorway in times like these at the beginning.
Yeah.
I am a one-way motorway.
Yeah, it just sounds the disability to not be able to use their words in this country. Like, sometimes we have to tread the water and just use them anyway, sort of thing. Whereas everyone can sound cool and use like bars and whiskey swilling and
shotgun
and shooting sort of. And it's just like, oh, this is so cool. Like we all just want to be cowboys and moonshine. And
you guys sound like you want to be hillbillies is what it sounds like to me.
maybe when Mike mentioned hillbillies, maybe we are the hillbillies and we just have
maybe he's talking about that.
Yeah.
Hillbillies. Have some like abandoned appliances, refrigerators, washing machines in the yard, a couple of trucks on blocks, get a shotgun, some chickens running around, maybe a goat or two, and you're there.
Oh, sounds wicked.
That sounds cool.
Whenever I go to Costco's with my wife, I always pretend I'm an American in there, and I go, oh, look, honey, there's that corn that we had at the Great Family Cookout. Remember the one with all the monster trucks and dirt bikes and
that's awesome. Dogs.
she's just stood in there like, would you shut up?
I you've got Costco too. I mean, what don't you guys steal from America, guys?
Come on. The only thing I wish that we had that you guys have is Target.
No, and fashion.
Target. My wife and daughter love Target so much.
I went to Target. That was the highlight of going to the States. I love that place. We have nothing like that. It's a magical world in there.
So would you guys come on tour some point in the States and come by me? I'm going to bring you a Target and a Costco gift card and just make your days.
We'll love you forever.
Maybe invite you to cook out with some corn on the cob and
monster trucks.
I think my wife just got home from Costco. Yeah, hey, that's where she was when you were saying that.
I went today.
The problem with Costco is everything's in bulk and like, your bill is expensive. Like you can't get like you can't just run in and like spend $20 on something.
Yeah,
So rule over here is if you spend under £100, you're not doing Costco right.
No.
James, you mentioned earlier about London. It's hard to kind of break into that. Like in the States here, you know, we have Los Angeles and New York and Chicago for blues, and of course Nashville is a huge thing. And you know, and then there's Austin, Texas, and Memphis, and New Orleans, and all that. So is that like, is London really, that's like the big center for music and arts and stuff, or anywhere else? Or
it's not so much, I mean, we've got a couple of big cities. I mean, funny enough, a lot of the big UK bands, obviously a lot of them London-based, Liverpool, of course, with the Beatles, a lot of them come from northern, you know, places. So Sheffield have a lot of big bands, Def Leppard and Arctic Monkeys, they're all from Sheffield. London is just an interesting one because in order to play in London, you need to be known. But the only way to be known is to play in that city. London is almost like you have to treat London as its own beast, really. And it's all, a lot of it, obviously, as you know, in big cities, as you said, New York, LA, all those types of places, Because of the cost in there, everything is quite ticket sale centric. And it's a bit of a, you know, double-edged sword. You need to play there in order to get known, but the only way to get known is to play there. So to,
they they really want you to pull crowds there if you're going to play.
Really,
there, you're not making any money.
But they'll say to you, you know, we're from Milton Keynes, which is about what, 50 miles from London, and they'll say to you, look, we want you to play.
You
on
said miles and not kilometers, so you're already getting the
miles. Yeah. So yeah, but like, you know, so that's a good hour or so, and they say, oh, we want you to play on a Wednesday night, and it's like, yeah, but. Yeah. Trying to, and especially if a lot of our fans are based in the north, that's 2-3 hours for them. Trying to get them down on a Wednesday night just isn't possible because people have work the next day and it's a whole day out of traveling and it's a lot of money. So, you know, once you break London, obviously you're laughing, but just trying to get in there can be difficult. So we play, you know, a lot of support shows in London, and that helps us get our name out there, and, you know, our promoter does try and get us the odd London gig to try and get our name going, get the ball rolling there. But as a place to really focus on it, it takes a lot of time and, you know, a lot of your energy.
Is that really critical to your initial success? So getting big in London, can you play these other, you know, mid-sized cities and other places in Europe?
I don't think for us and the style of music we play, London is, no, as important as it is to someone that's playing
like pop music or, you know, modern, yeah, pop whatever. Music, yeah.
Any form of modern music, indie music, for example, like indie bands need to crack London, sort of thing, in my eyes.
Yeah.
I think for us, like, it's very clicky anyway, what, like the circuit that we sort of play on. So, and there's so many great festivals and
right,
events and everything else, which. So some of them now, like Made of Stone, which used to be Ramblin' Man Fairs, got, who's on Made of Stone this year? Larkin Poe are coming over to play.
Oh, yeah, great. We've had them on. Great band.
Rival Sons have played on that. Blackstone Cherry, I think, played it. Mm-hmm. Jared James Nichols, who we've played with a few times.
He's a good dude. He's been on the podcast. What a monster. He's
a bull. He's just a bull of a human as well.
He's a real Viking. Like, if you said, pick out a modern day Viking, that's that guy.
Yeah. But he is the nicest man you'll ever meet. But you meet him and he's like, oh my God.
There is no ego in that guy at all.
No, he's such a lovely guy.
Have you guys done some gigs with Blackstone Cherry or played on festival with him or anything? No,
not with Blackstone Cherry. Okay. I wish. I know a couple of guys that have had that. I think Chris Barris went on tour with Blackstone Cherry when they were over here last. Robert John and the Wrecker one that's sort of on that sort of mid at the moment from being
they're
like
bigger in the UK smoke than here. They play super they do great in Europe.
They're playing some awesome shows when they come over here. I think they're over here later in the year.
That's a great band.
Yeah, they're not far off of what I think, like Blackberry Smoke and stuff, Rival Sons and that are hitting. But it's funny that you say that about the about them not being well not seeming as popular over there. Why is that? It's something that we always say. Like, they come over here, and maybe it's just because America's such a big place for a start.
You know. And Brian, help me out here, but regionally, you know, some of these bands do well, like in the Southeast or Midwest, where I'm from, or Brian's from a little bit at Poles. I think the a lot of the problem is there's not a platform for these bands really to be heard other than playing live. So the radio plays, you know, the same 10 songs over and over again. You know, they don't, it's real hard to break in new artists. So unless you're listening to podcasts on YouTube streaming and saying, hey, you may like XYZ, there is not a great place to really expose these rock bands.
Yeah. And then everyone that we talk to, you know, and we don't always know how to say this without putting down American crowds, but it really sounds like everybody says when they play over there, the people are even like so much more receptive, like just more into it passionately, I guess. Like, everybody says when they go to the UK, it's just like super love from everybody, and just people seeing fans and all of them seem more into it. I think there's probably less of those
It's funny because it's like sometimes it seems like that with some English bands and stuff that do really well over in America, but I don't know. Maybe it's a culture thing. Maybe it's
Joe Bonamassa made a good point. I remember watching a video with him, and he said that cultures are very quick to eat their own but celebrate others. So he was saying, you know, so he's from the States, but one of his biggest following is from the UK in Europe. He's and like you said about Robert John and the Wreck, you know, they've got more of a following over here than they do in the States. He was talking about, you know, like people playing old blues songs where you could go and see Freddie King or Albert King play them in a blues bar, but people were selling out stadiums to watch Eric Clapton cover a version of a song that they could hear from the original artist. So it's, I don't know if part of it is just that, but yeah, it's it is a bit odd, but I think we're quite fortunate in the shows that we play, especially at the bigger festivals. People want to be there and they really actively go out looking for new bands to listen to, which is a massive, obviously, benefit for us as a as an up-and-coming band. And obviously, the bigger bands still get the attention that they deserve, but it gives us that platform to actually play and generate a fan base. And people are receptive to listening to your music, buying your merch, you know, actually coming up to talk to you. So, you know, we are fortunate on that front.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment of Protein Plus meal plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
We are always looking for new bands. Like I'll go on, you know, like you mentioned earlier about Spotify. I think you were talking about that when you, listen to Blackberry Smoke and it says, you know, bands like that you might like, and you come across them, Dirty Roses. So you mentioned these Wicked Rivers. Yep. Who else is someone that's been kind of doing this around the same time as you and your generation that you think is great that maybe we might not know about? Or
Tom Kilner. Tom Kilner's really good. We're playing with him in a couple of weeks. He's really good. I've known Tom for a long time. He's sort of maybe a bit more of a tame version of what we sort of do, but a bit more country-ish sort of Americana-y style. He's really good. One of the big bands over here at the moment in our scene is a band called Brave Rival. Which is there, but they're a little bit more like, imagine what Heart would sound like. Who else we got? Obviously, Troy Redfern and stuff. Probably heard of them.
There's Cardinal Black.
Cardinal Black is another one. They're coming over to you soon.
Yeah, I think they sold out. Yeah, they sold out that Nashville show.
Yeah, they sold out that Nashville show.
I've heard that name before, Brian. Has somebody
Cardinal Black. I've heard that before, too.
Well, their guitarist is Chris Buck. And obviously Chris is a very celebrated guitarist from all walks of the guitar world these days. So obviously he was doing something before, and then obviously Cardinal Black formed. And I think with the success that he's had on YouTube and his previous band and just his general, you know, people know him from the guitar world, obviously that's then helped them raise to the heights that they're raising to already. They're definitely a band to watch. And I think, yeah, they said they've got a couple of shows coming up in the US, and I think they sold out their Nashville show in less than a day.
That's crazy.
So, yeah. Like, fair. It's amazing.
Els Bailey as well, obviously.
Yep.
Yeah. Els, yeah. We're trying to.
So her backing singer, Demi Mariner, she's fantastic as well. She's got an album out as well. She's actually the... I asked her if her band, because I really love her music. And when we was trying to organize the supports for when we do our album release show, I was like, I don't want a night of just slaying guitars all night. Like, and yeah, I want to have it so it's like a nice build up and then like everything else. And I was like, oh, who could we ask that's going to like, that's not going to like be too much. This people are going to enjoy. And so I'd seen that Demi Mariner had played a few other people's venues that we played. So I was like, oh, do you know what? And I checked her out off of listening to one of the videos. And I was like, oh, this is really good. It's like really Americana sort of that like edgy country sort of style writing. But then some of it's a bit more poppy and happy as well. So I asked her if she would be up for supporting her with her full band, and we're lucky enough that she said yes. So, but yeah, she does the backing vocals in Els Bailey's band as well. So, but she's really fantastic too.
Yeah, she's great.
I have an Els Bailey story for all you, Brian. This is for you too, because you may like it. Well, we've been working to get Els Bailey and Joanna Shaw Taylor and a couple other blues artists on, but on our Instagram page for the podcast, I do the most of posting on it. Brian does the Facebooks up, but regardless, I found out that if you post memes on Instagram, you get a lot more likes and whatever than you do like posting live music, posting links to our pod. Like, what the fuck, guys? Like, so anyways, I posted this meme maybe 2 months ago, and it was, you know, $10 to see the greatest band in the world, Led Zeppelin, 1970. Now $100 to see somebody with a laptop. You know, it's just a joke.
Yeah, I think I saw that. Yeah.
Els Bailey, she reposted it and said, hey, like, music is music and we should celebrate everything. And I was like, fuck. So I like comment. I said, I posted that originally and I was just making a joke. Sorry. And she at least put like on it, but I felt like a dickhead. So,
I'm sure it's water under the bridge right now. So,
she won't even remember us when we interview her. I'm going to wait till the very end of the interview to bring that up.
Yeah, do you remember when I was a dick that time?
Remember that meme, you didn't like it?
Yeah, get the interview in first before she runs away.
But it's true. I stand by that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I agree. For ticket prices now are absolutely ridiculous. I tell you what, the conversation is... I know like American country, like the pop country stuff is obviously quite popular in America. As I was obviously
and again, what's wrong with us?
You know, but over here, it's getting more and more and more popular. So we apologize
to all of you right now, and you tell your friends that the guys from All Blues and All Things Blues and Southern Rock apologize.
No. I'm a big fan of Luke Combs. I'm a big fan of Chris Stapleton.
Well, Stapleton is a different animal, though.
Those
guys aren't bro country.
No. But obviously, you've got like Morgan Wallen and all that lot them lot. But they're like Luke Combs and stuff. They're getting more and more popular over here. They're all selling really big venues now and stuff like that.
The children.
Because all the hillbillies you got.
Yeah, it's funny. Like I was saying for a while that I think that the American country, pop country stuff will be like the next big thing over here. I was saying it all last year. I was like that's going to like blow up over here. I think that's going to be the next thing. Next thing I know, Beyonce releases a country album, and everything in the shop everything in our clothes shops is now all denim and cowgirl boots and everything else. It's like, oh my God, I can see into the future.
Pretty soon, Ross, people are going to have these giant cookouts with corn on the cob and hogs on this and monster trucks. It's coming.
I might do that
this year.
Your
dream is coming.
I might do that this year.
You already have baked beans, and God help you guys. You eat that for breakfast on toast, but you've got the baked beans down.
Yeah, we've got the beans. But yeah, it's funny how one person can like influence – I think Beyonce's out new album's just gone to like number one in the country charts or something like that, which is crazy. But at the same time, I look at it as I'm like, oh, that's probably going to open up a lot more doors. She'll gain a load of playlists and everything, which will then broaden people's horizons to like, even if it is delving into the pop country stuff, it's still better than some of the stuff we have on the radio over here on a daily basis. And it's better than talking about Robin Poundland and things like that. I'm pretty up for it. I think it's good.
Yeah, I think it opens up, you know, as you said, Ross, like you've been calling this for ages, contrary to what some people don't want to believe. And it's almost, you know, I've seen a couple of things now, people are like, oh, I love country music. And we're here like, yeah, it's great. Why haven't you been listening? Why is it taking Beyonce to prove to you that it's good?
I think it's because everyone thinks that country music's just banjos and talking and everything else. But there's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah.
A lot more nuance.
Especially the good stuff, too. Like, there's like Margot Price, if you haven't checked her stuff out, she's really good.
Lainey Wilson.
Casey Musgraves, Lainey Wilson. Lainey Wilson has a duet on the new Black Crowes album that comes out this month.
Really?
Too. I'm real interested to hear that. Yeah. You guys Crowes fans?
Yeah. I love Black Crowes.
Yeah. Well, we got into Lainey Wilson through Lucas Nelson.
Yeah, Lucas Nelson, who's great. And, I mean, Lady Gaga did a song with Lucas Nelson, too. Yeah. So there's a lot of, Willie Nelson's son, so there's a whole lot of history there.
I think the whole A Star Is Born playlist is kind of that kind of restart kind of this
bridge.
This whole, like, hype back into country music. Granted, that's, like, probably nearly 10 years old now, or however long it is. Time is flying these days. But that really got people back onto... oh, actually, this is really, really good. Because I wasn't sure. I was like, Lady Gaga, really? And then I watched the film, and it was incredible. And the soundtrack in it is unbelievable. And, you know,
Lucas Nelson and his band recorded, like, all of the music, didn't they? They were, like, the main band to do all
of it. I believe so,
You can so easily tell it's him as well. Like, if you listen to Lucas Nelson, you're like, oh, yeah. Like, you can hear his chops in it, and you can hear, like, the drummers, like, his rhythms and stuff that he would go for, and... yeah, and again, it was produced by Dave Cobb, I think, a lot of it, wasn't it?
Yeah. Who did the last, this newest Blackberry Smoke album, too, Dave Cobb.
Yeah, he did, and the one before, I think, as well.
Mm-hmm. He's something. So maybe, you know what? Maybe as this country music thing takes over England and the UK, it opens more doors for bands like you and your peers to come and play London and stuff. Because, right, you're probably... a little bit behind, but you know, this may open doors for you guys.
That's exactly it. That's exactly the thing. The only thing is obviously if the pop country stuff gets like obviously we're but people search for other stuff through other artists. Like that's how we find loads of people. That's how we ended up finding the Steelwoods and who else? Like I think for me them discovering like Jason Isbell and stuff was through obviously, I'd heard of him, and I think I tried to give it a go once before, and then I watched someone had released a video about his new Telecaster that he brought out, and I watched it, and they were like, "Oh, you need to go and check out the album Southeastern." So I was like, "All right, I'll go and have a listen to it," and I listened to it, and literally just changed my life. Literally, did proper life changing musician, and when I say changed my life, I mean changed my life, like. In every way, it changed the way I think, changed the way I am as a person. It changed the way I approach music. It changed. It made me want to play guitar. Like for me, he is my idol. And it's weird to say. It took me 34 years to find my guitar idol, because I'd never really had one. Like I loved guitarists and I loved everything, but there was always something missing, and it's the way that he does things. In a song that I just absolutely love, and the lyrically, he's unreal. Like
he's one of the best modern songwriters right now.
Absolutely phenomenal.
Sure. Weathervane's album that they released last year is incredible.
It's funny actually because Weathervane's actually I took a while to grow on me because I love reunions and I love Nashville sound. So Weathervane's took a while to grow on me, and I know that he self-produced that one, so. Maybe that was partly to do with it. Like the sonically, just took me a while to adjust.
There's a whole documentary on here, which you released to HBO in the States. If you watch it is
I've seen it.
Raw. Okay, it's super raw, and like, you know, he and his wife split, and you can kind of understand it if you watch that.
Yeah, yeah, my favorite bit in that was because that was for Reunions, wasn't it? The Reunions album, and he. Mm-hmm. It was a bit when he's trying to record that video for the TV in the in his like conservatory or like shed at the back.
The Amazon guy was
the Amazon guy. Not
yeah.
He's like, I hate this shit. Like, he's like, I can't do this anymore. Like, and I was like, oh man, I feel that. But yeah, it's just for me. Like, he's. I mean, we've seen him. We saw him last year, full band. And then after we saw him full band, I was like, I'll do anything to just hear him on an acoustic. And then literally it was like January came and it was like, I'm doing two solo shows in London. And I was like, oh my God, I have to get tickets. And I literally got three tickets, one for me, one for James, and one for my dad as well, who came on to watch him. And it was in like church, and it was so good. And it was just one of them things where it's like, you just left and was like, God, why do I even bother trying? Like,
this is it. I was about to say, it's one of those things, as inspirational as he is, it was an incredible gig. And you listen to him play guitar and it's phenomenal. And he'll play something and think, oh yeah, I could do that. And then he'll play something else and it's like, well, I'm just going to sell everything tomorrow. It's just, yeah, you know, he is just another level of musician. And it, yeah, as Ross said, it was... I've always preferred electric music to acoustic, but having watched that gig, it was a masterclass in just one man and a guitar. And to have 1,000 people just in silence for 2 hours listening to you was very special. Very, very special.
And he can get after it on guitar. Like, you know, if you watch those live videos or see him in concert, like when he's recording, he's very reserved, but man, he can shred.
Oh yeah.
But he plays in a way which is super different and really like, it's like he's not slamming through pentatonic runs and stuff, which there
it's
is
actually... all kind of his phrasing with what he's doing, but
yeah, he can get it's after like, it. Yeah, it's like he's always on the edge of something feeling like it's going to go wrong or something that's not going to work is about to come, but it never happens. But yeah, I just think it's super good. And like you said earlier, Chris Stapleton as well is a massive fan of mine. I'm a massive fan of his, sorry, I wish he was a massive fan of mine. They're just so good, some of these guys.
James, who are your guitar guys?
I mean, there's a couple of standouts. I mean, my ultimate guitar hero of anyone ever is Paul Kossoff with Free.
Yeah, nice.
I love Free and especially Paul Kossoff. You know, my vibrato is based, it's just a knockoff of Paul Kossoff. If you were to order him on wish.com, you'd probably get somewhere near me for that. That sound, and it's so nice. Like, people would say to me after a couple of gigs, oh, you sound like Paul Kossoff, and some people take offense to that, but again, I'm like, that has made my year because he's my hero. And I remember playing a gig, and I was using a Marshall stack and a Les Paul, and I had a pedal board, and it got towards the end of the gig. It was a covers band, and we were playing All Right Now, and it was in this big, like, long tent at like a biker festival. And I thought, you know what, I'm just sod it, like, took the lead out of the pedal board, took it straight into the guitar, just went like that on the top of the amp, everything gunned to 10, and played All Right Now. And the sound man, I've never been told off so hard in my life, but it was so worth it. It sounded incredible. And then I think modern day guitar players probably have to be John Mayer. I think as a whole rounded guitarist and musician, I think he's probably the best living guitarist in the world. Not so much because there are people that can do things more technical than him, and there are people that write better songs than him and they can sing better than him. But I think as a package, he's got everything, and he can turn his hand to pop, to blues, to rock, to country, to, you know, anything. Obviously, like, I think he's learned a lot when he moved to Dead & Company and did, you know, And I think that really, people really started to take him seriously when he did that. He's always been a bit of a, has an expensive haircut and has just dated a lot of people. But actually, if you listen to his music, he's a very, very good musician.
He's an incredible guitar player. I would love to see a record from him where he just cuts loose on everything and just goes full throttle. I'd like to hear
it. Yeah, I would love that.
And that was quite the crowd for him to win over, you know, Dead fans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's done a good job of it.
Absolutely. And I mean, again, like, his latest album, Grant's a couple of years old now, Soul Brock, it took me a long time to get into it. But in the last like 6 months, I've really listened to it, and having heard more about like the story behind it, and he knows it's a tip to like all those 80s songs.
Even the cover, his album art is too. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But you listen to it and it's like, actually, it's got a place in the world and it sounds great. So yeah, I'd say toss off Peter Green as well, of course, Fleetwood Mac, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, John Mayer from like the latter years are definitely my heroes, I would say, musically.
Angus Young.
Yeah. Come on. We could sit here and, you know, there's Angus Young, there's obviously Charlie Starr, Jason Isbell. I think from a songwriting perspective, I'll always argue that the best songwriter of all time is Bob Dylan, because he's a bit like the Beatles. Like, yes, people have probably done better, but they were the people that created, you know, the reason that pop music is how it is because of the Beatles. So like them or not, they're like the genesis of what music is to today. And I think Bob Dylan's like that with songwriting. Obviously, you know, you have people like Neil Young and Don McLean and other people that are amazing songwriters, but Bob Dylan was the one that really made it as popular. And a lot of the popular songs, you know, when Adele had Make You Feel My Love, everyone's like, oh, I love that song. It's like, yeah, it's a Bob Dylan song. Same as, you know, All Along the Watchtower and Knocking on Heaven's Door.
That's how you know Bob Dylan is one of the top, if not one of the best songwriters of all time, because everybody that covers a Dylan song always does a great job. And if you know, absolutely, if you're not writing good music, it's not being covered.
Yep.
Have you ever seen the one of Billy Strings covering
I Think Twice Is Right?
No, well, I've already seen a lot of the stuff, but not that one. I'll be on YouTube after this.
That's another one. That'll make you want a quick guitar.
You know what? Anytime I hear anybody play guitar, I mean, you guys make me want a quick guitar too. But every time I play guitar, I want a quick guitar. I'm like, God, it just sucks. The tone sucks. Everything sucks.
I definitely disagree with that, but if you do have a quick guitar, please tell me that you're selling that special and I'll buy it off you.
Well, you can't listen. You guys come to the States and come near me, I'll bring the show. You can play it.
Oh. Yeah. Nice.
That's big the one. Fat
neck on I'm it. Looking for a junior with single pickup junior, either a black one or a tobacco burst, but this TDL.
Probably tobacco burst.
Man, that's great.
I was playing it
right before we got on, guys. Like, honest,
I recently picked up a junior. It was an Epiphone SG that had been converted to a junior, but it had been like resprayed in tobacco burst with a nitro finish. And it is, I paid like
£200 for it.
$250. And it is the bargain of the century. It's amazing.
Same thing with Fenders and stuff. If you find diamonds in the rough, even the Squires, like, you know, good neck, good frets, you can put some upgraded shit on those things. That's fun to do.
Yeah, I mean, both of our Fenders, really, and my telly, they're all parts casters. So we built them ourselves, really. And they do. They sound amazing.
I use this a lot, but I bought this Kramer Beretta Special for $100.
Didn't Gary Moore play one of them?
And I put Seymour Duncan Super Distortion in, new bridge, new nut, new tuners, and it's fun as shit to play. It's for my, you know, 80s metal stuff.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I paid $170 for it and put another $150 in parts, and it's awesome.
So this sounds like it could be a good segue into that time of the show, which I'm going to guess is going to include some gear talk in the lightning round.
Yes, guys, you got a couple more minutes for our lightning round, which doesn't mean it's fast. It means it's just stupid questions.
Yep.
Nice.
All right. We'll go to both of you because we're already talking gear talk a little bit. You both love to sell and buy guitars or whatever. So I want to hear from each of you. What's one piece of gear you got your eye on right now that you want to get? So Ross, we'll start with you.
Oh, is there anything I really want? I wouldn't mind a 0018 to go with the Martin, to go with the D18. I wouldn't mind a 0000.
Oh, that's a D18. Woo! Did you buy that used or did you get that brand new?
I bought it used.
Quite pricey.
I've just bought what I had my eye on. So, because I really wanted a gold top Les Paul with P90s in it. So, I've bought one about a month ago now. So, I'm not really pining after anything because I know I can't afford anything.
But you know, money's no object. And James, I'll throw this to you. Money's no object. Like, is that what you're going with?
For me, I would say, oh, I don't know. I've listened to a lot of Blackberry Smoke recently, so I've got a hankering for a Marshall Plexi again.
Oh, yeah.
But again, I had a Martin before. I wouldn't mind having a Martin again, or a Les Paul Junior, like a Tobacco Burst Les Paul Junior. But I think if I was really craving something at the moment, it'd be an old Marshall. I think that's really where my heart is at the moment.
I'm taking a picture off the wall for Ross. I don't know if you can see.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. 56, that one is.
It's gold with P90s. I no longer own that guitar. I regret that. That was the early stages of my band that I'm still in, but I was quite young in that. But that's a nice gold top. Now I'm distracted. Okay. Hey, London has the new Gibson garage that opened up.
Yeah,
they do.
Yeah, we haven't been yet.
Yeah.
Gotta go. Oh, one in Nashville. Every time I go to Nashville, I got to go.
Yeah. I want to go to the one in Thingy.
Yeah, Nashville is a pilgrimage for us at some point, I'm sure.
Absolutely. I mean, your music's going to hit the heart of that town, man. You just got to find the right showcase to get in over there.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd love
to. All right.
Next.
What's one place you guys want to play that you've never played before?
Nashville.
Nashville. Is there a certain stage club you like, the Ryman or
the Ryman? I think the Ryman, or I love Red Rocks as well. I think Red Rocks
Amsterdam,
awesome venue.
I've never seen a show at the Ryman or Red Rocks, but this summer in June, I'm seeing both nights of Blackberry Smoke there.
Nice.
Taking my parents, they're coming up from Florida, and I'm gonna
do
a nice thing for them. Yeah. I actually bought tickets. I didn't bother Charlie about tickets for this one because it's the Ryman. So I just bought them.
I wouldn't mind playing the Albert Hall in this country either. I'd take that as well.
Yeah, those are good. I mean, there's a lot of legendary places in the there's a lot of legendary places in the UK and England and all that. What's your favorite place to play right now? Like, you go there, it feels like home, kind of everything's, the karma's good.
We have a little bar that's up that's about an hour and a half away from us in Newark, which is sort of near Nottingham. Obviously, I don't know if you know England at all. It's called the Flying Circus, and it's almost like it's run by a
brilliant guy.
Yeah, yeah. So it's run by a guy called Tony, who's just the loveliest man, and he basically just converted this bar into like almost like an American diner.
Yeah.
Or like an American bar, and it's got like a bull's head on the back wall, and all the bands that have played there have got like their names like written on the wall, like painted on the wall sort of thing, and it's just got this epic vibe. And there's two stages there. There's like a downstairs bar stage, which is always free, and then there's an upstairs bigger stage and room and stuff, which is you normally have to pay for to get into that one. But the we always say, oh, can we just play downstairs in the bar? It's just, and the stage is tiny. Like, it's like barely fits you on there. But it's just the most epic vibe to when you play in there. And it's full. People just love it. Like, they love going there as well. Like, it's such a great bar. And he's had loads of issues with noise complaints and stuff. And they just managed to get rid of that neighbor. So hopefully it'll get even better for him now.
We played there last year. It was literally one of the last shows we did of the year. And it was our favourite show all year. We played festivals and we played in front of thousands of people. And this show was in front of like 50, 60 people. And it was so much fun. We've never had a bad gig there. It's just always such a laugh there. So if you do ever come over to the UK and you're up near Newark, our Newark, obviously, not the New York Newark, please, I urge you to go, because you won't regret it. It's so much fun.
I put it on my list. I'm going to be 2 weeks in Europe this summer, but it's going to be mostly the Netherlands and Germany. I haven't gone over to England. I want to go to England one day, but my wife's half German, half Dutch, and she doesn't have any family in England. So I'll come see you guys. Anybody got a room?
Yeah, do it. No, let us know.
I'll bring the TV yellow with me.
Yeah. You might not take it back, but you can bring it.
You know what? I know rent's expensive and hotels are expensive, so I might be able to work out a deal. Junk food. What is both of your junk food of choice?
Are we talking like franchise or just like food in general?
Whatever, like whatever. Crappy food that's not good for you, but
snack,
it's good to eat.
Sweets.
Yeah.
Fast food restaurant.
Chocolate. Cakes. I think the question should be, what's your healthy food of choice?
The shorter list.
Is there healthy food in England? Because everything's either boiled or fried or mashed or something, right?
Yeah, roasted. Nah, definitely for me, chocolate and crisps. I don't like. Do you have Pringles in America?
Of course, yeah, of course. Yeah.
I can devour a tub of Pringles.
I've been on a diet. Wasn't there a lawsuit in England about Pringles being called chips or something? They're not allowed to be called chips or crisps.
Yeah,
or something.
They're not allowed to be called crisps, are they?
Yeah.
Corn, aren't they? They're corn based, or they're not potato. Yeah. Is it something like that?
No, they're potato. They're just. It's made of like the potato flakes, I think, almost what potatoes are made out of, and they're reconstituted and fried. So that's the difference.
Pringles are up there. I don't know. I've got a hankering for ice cream these days.
Yeah.
I do love ice cream. But again, it's in the mood. Sometimes I'm in the mood for savory. So a sausage roll or something Italian. I love pasta and anything like that. But yeah,
junk food.
Yeah, exactly. It's not junk food, is it? So junk food have to be ice cream.
Okay. Absolutely. Do you guys have Pop-Tarts over in England?
Yeah, they're not the same as yours, though.
No, ours are terrible.
Ours are like cardboard with a little bit of molten lava in them.
Yeah. Cardboard with molten lava.
You guys, I use American guys, and they used to put butter on their Pop-Tarts. Is that something that you guys do, or is that just...
Oh, I don't.
No, it's just that's just a one-off.
If you buy the frosted ones, I mean, there's no reason to put butter on them. It's a little weird. We've had Pop-Tarts come up in conversations the last couple interviews, just as stupid stuff to ask what your favorite flavor was. A guy that we like a lot, Tony Higbee, who plays with Tom Kiefer, Cinderella, and also Brother Kane. Anyways, I was at the grocery store, about a week or so ago, Brian? I took a picture of the big wall of Pop-Tarts and sent it to him. I said, pick a flavor, guys. Okay, so we got the junk food question out of the way. All right, I'm gonna give you guys some choices. You got to pick the best choice here. Okay,
right.
Are you guys Beatles or Stones?
Beatles. Boy, however, okay. The new Stones album is unbelievably good.
Yeah, it is. It is surprisingly good. It's has the old Stones vibes to it.
Yeah, okay. So good. It's such a good recording.
It is. So you're Beatles. What about Zeppelin or the Beatles?
Zeppelin.
Yeah, Zeppelin.
Okay, that's the right call. Zeppelin is. But Zeppelin's the best things you guys have ever done musically.
No, we'll go along with that.
Out of all the really good music that's come over from England, man, I love Zeppelin. So
I think Zeppelin's like, you talk about Stairway. You must know. They must have known when they'd written that song and they pressed stop on the record button that was going to break the world. You can't have a song like that and think, nah, I just don't think it's going to work. But you must know.
Yeah, I think that's the one. Page had a trouble coming up with a solo for that, didn't he? It took him a while to come
really?
Up with what he wanted to do. And now it's like one of the most well-known solos of all time.
Yeah, and it's, you know, you're waiting for the end of the song and it's, No,
and definitely. It goes crazy at the end. You know, starts off beautiful, the kind of folk fingering guitar, and then it really goes.
I fell foul of it when I was younger because obviously the song's like 8 minutes long.
Yeah,
and a friend said to me, just listen to the end of it. Just get through the start. The start is great, and you learn how amazing it is. Just listen to the end of it, and it will change your life. And I went, no, it won't. And he said, yes, it will. And I listened to it and came back and went, oh, my God, it's changed my life. And I do that with a friend of mine. And he said, oh, it's a bit boring. I said, just get through the first 5 minutes and enjoy the last bit. And he come back to me the next day and he said, that was the greatest thing I've ever listened to. I said, just trust me on it.
Ross was getting ready to play it for us. He was ready.
No Stairway.
Stairway denied. Brian, when you were going to dances in school, did they ever play Stairway to Heaven?
I don't recall. I know the last song of the night was always Paradise by the Dashboard Lights by
Meatloaf. Oh my God.
If you were not on dance floor, you were a loser for that.
I remember like an eighth grade dance and the DJ played Stairway to Heaven. So everybody starts out like the slow, because it's slow, right? Yeah. Like you're slow dancing with a girl. And at the end, it goes crazy. You're like, what are you supposed to do? Like slow down fast to it, or like let go? And like, it's very awkward. It is not a great song to play at a dance.
That's when you just push her away in air guitar and all and the guys
headbang. But it's quite nice at the beginning, and it's also 8 minutes, which is a little bit too long to slow dance to as well.
Mm.
All right. Give us a guilty pleasure artist or song for each of you.
Mine's quite – I love Justin Timberlake.
Really?
Yeah, and I don't think it's guilty. Bruno Mars as well. I genuinely think Bruno Mars is the modern equivalent of Michael Jackson, minus the scandals and the
change. He started as a Michael Jackson impersonator.
Yeah, but I just think everything, I was never too sure in him. And then when he came out with 24 Karat Magic, that song and that album, that super completely talented. Changed my perspective on him. And ever since
then, Grammys a couple years ago.
Yeah, and he nailed it. His version of Dirty Diana is insane. And he did, obviously, he's now doing the Silk Sonic stuff with Anderson .Paak. And I just think he's brilliant. Him and Justin Timberlake are probably mine.
He has his own Strat. He has his own custom Strat, gold Strat you can get now, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a weird goldy bronzy color, isn't it?
It is, because I think it was like a repaint or something. So they tried to replicate it and saw. I saw it at a Guitar Center and picked it up. And
oh, really?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's like $5,000, so I didn't buy it. I have two kids in college. I can't get a $5,000 guitar.
That's like when John Mayer brought out that, was it the PRS Eagle thing? $50,000. I was like, oh my God. Who's buying that?
You know, it's a replica. It's not even the real Bruno Mars guitar. I might pay $5,000 for that. I'm not paying $5,000 for a replica.
You probably paid less for his one.
Yeah, probably would. We'll sell it to you for like $3,000 and buy $5,000. Ross, what's your guilty pleasure?
I don't really know. James, what's my guilty pleasure? Something I always listen to that just really irritates you.
There is something, I'm trying to think about it. You do love Limp Bizkit, but again, that's not really guilty.
Oh my God.
Limp Bizkit are amazing. Is that, that's not a guilty pleasure. That's
no,
so
it isn't.
No, no, it's a guilty pleasure.
That's not a guilty pleasure.
Yeah, but
we're making the call on that one. The three of us are against you.
A bit of background on that. So I flew to the States a couple of years ago. And I asked Ross to drop me off at the airport, and the airport's about an hour away. And I don't really like flying, so I was pretty anxious. And it's like 7 a.m.
I think it was earlier than that.
Yeah, it was like 6:30, whatever it was. It was early. It was not an acceptable time in the morning. And we're in the van driving down to Heathrow, and he's got Limp Bizkit blaring out as loud as it can be. And I'm just like, Ross, I'm on the brink of a panic attack here, man. Like, please turn it off. So I will forever resent that band, as good as they may or may not be.
Yeah, maybe listening to Break Stuff at 7 a.m. wasn't the best way to board an airplane.
All right, we're going with Limp Bizkit. That's okay. If you guys got to choose one celebrity to be your best friend, who would you choose?
How famous do they have to be?
I mean, they have to be known. They don't have to be like, you know, globally. Like you can pick a you know, someone from England or the UK or Europe or something.
Yours would obviously be Jason Isbell, wouldn't it?
Yeah, surely, yeah.
That's a fantastic one.
I think mine would be John Mayer.
Nice. So good choices. Yeah. So your musical idols, those are going to be your best friends.
Yeah, because then they can teach me all that stuff.
That's a good call. What do you guys think the perfect, if you could pick one age to stay the rest of eternity to be, what's the right age?
26 and 364 days.
One day should I tell you stuff? Okay. Oddly specific, I like it, Ross. Good job.
I'm not far off that, so I'll let you know if life peaks at that point. I don't know, I think.
Wait a minute, James, how old are you?
I'm 26.
Son of a bitch.
There you go. Like, I'm at the peak of my
You are. Yeah.
I would say early 20s. I think, obviously, you know, I haven't got into my 30s and onwards, so it's hard for me to tell you. Being in my early 20s, there was just no, you don't care about the world, do you? You just do your own thing, you know, you are your own person. I think, obviously, you know, life is, you don't have many things to pay for in life. You kind of just enjoy life for what it is. I could be wrong, but that's what I'm sticking with now.
I think you got to be old enough to have some wisdom, but not too old where your body just randomly hurts for no reason.
If you can wake up without a hangover, then you're doing well.
32 tops.
Yeah, I think 30. Yeah, I think 30 you're probably being serious about it. Because by the time you hit 30, you're sort of, I need to start actually growing up now and thinking about life. And like, I don't know. Things are going to start aching soon, and I've got bills to pay, and I've got like, families and things to look after. Yeah. And I think 30. I think early 20s, you're just like stupid and just...
You just don't know
enough. The trouble is, and I don't want to rub it in, I'm not at 30 yet, so I can't tell you how good or bad.
Shut up, James. You just be quiet over there. Who invited you? We just need Rob coming back next time, not James.
I'll tell you what, we'll do this in 5 years' time, and I'll let you know 30's been...
You can come back when you're 30.
Banned for 4 years. By now, anyway.
Banned for 4 years, that's right.
Yeah.
Should be. Try and make a note of that, would you?
Lie low. Don't get myself involved.
You don't know anything. You be quiet over there. You wake up every day without body aches and pains. I'm so jealous. So jealous. All right. Last question to you guys. Both of you guys have to answer this. The last three artists you've either listened to or streamed. And you can look at your phones if you want to.
What have I listened to?
I actually was listening to, again, it come through, I think I was listening to like Lucas Nelson and all that kind of Southern rock. Have you heard of a guy called Sam Morrow?
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Brian, have we heard of Sam Morrow before?
Yeah, he was just on. Yeah.
And I've just heard...
He was our last interview. Yeah.
In no way.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Really cool dude, man. He was a great dude.
He literally just released an EP a couple of days ago. So I've been blasting out. Ross, I meant to tell you about that. It's got some cool stuff.
The song By Your Side is great. I love that
song. By Your Side's great. What's the one that I was listening to? Heartbreak Man was cool. And the other one that I was listening to, to prove it here, the last song I was listening to was Heartbreak Man. What was the song I was listening to? More of his latest. It came out in February, sorry. That's really cool. Person before that was AC/DC. Was banging out some Thunderstruck, and then before that was A Long Way to the Top, so the first album.
Yeah.
Before that was Blackberry Smoke. So there you go.
Nice.
Good choices. Good. In a upcoming episode on the podcast, we already recorded with Sam, has not come out yet.
Oh, cool. I look forward to hearing that. I've listened to a lot of his. Is he the guitar player?
He plays guitar some, but he's the singer.
He's a great singer. He's a great singer song, but his guitar player is awesome. He's got some very tasty. Yep. Guitars, so.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I look forward to hearing that one. I'm really into Sam at the moment. So, yeah, how cool is that?
That's funny. That's what a great. Yeah. Ross, what do you got?
My last three, funnily enough, was Lainey Wilson. I was listening to Wild Flowers and Wild Horses earlier because that is an absolute banging song. I was listening to a guy called Drayton Farley. Have you heard of him?
No.
I found him on Instagram, through Instagram, and he's sort of just like a songwriter, country songwriter. He's got one song called Pitch and Fit, which I really, really love. And I was trying to learn how to play. Well, I was just trying to remember the words to cover it earlier. I was just messing around with it. And then Blackberry Smoke was on there as well. That was before him. I've got loads of stuff. Funny enough, The Darkness. Rolling Stones.
We were talking about that before we started recording The Darkness. That first record, amazing.
Yeah, so literally that first record was on there the other day.
If you watch on the Gibson TV YouTube channel of the tour of the London Gibson Garage, the Hawkins brothers are there to walk through it with Mark, to take the tour and show everybody all the stuff off.
Really? Yeah.
Worth a watch.
He's a very underrated. They're both very underrated guitarists as well. I mean, they're a great band. Man,
the way they do the harmonies together, and then some of the solos are just so over the top.
Yeah, they're super clever. They really know their stuff. Like,
Yeah.
As they act and everything, and they're proper.
Well, Justin's a very polished songwriter. Like, he's he writes for a lot of people. He's probably made more money writing songs than playing in the band.
And his Justin Hawkins Rides Again on YouTube is so good. Say, if I'm on YouTube these days, it's either him or the Michael Parmesano videos of people breaking down songs. That he's got, some really interesting videos. So
He's great.
But that was
what. So Roth has you have really jumped in this country rock U.S. country thing over them. You fully embraced it.
Yeah, I love all that stuff. It's not just the music though; it's the culture with it. It's the fashion. I just love all of that stuff. I love I don't know. I'm hoping it's not one of them things that if I come over there, then I'm just massively disappointed. do you know what I mean?
It depends where you go. You have to go to the right.
I love all that culture, and I love the stories that are told in all the songs. And I wish we had more hat shops in this country, and I wish we had more places that sold good boots and good jeans. And because I love all that stuff as well. James does as well. He's literally sent me a picture of a pair of boots earlier saying, how awesome are these? And it's just, I just wish we had more of that stuff in it, even down to the jewelry and stuff that the bands wear. I'm we don't have any of that over here. We're lucky if you get a tracksuit that says there's pasties on it or something like that. It's I look at the fashion and I'm just God, no wonder Americans take the piss out of us.
I was in the shop earlier, literally went in there to look for a denim shirt, and I could not find anything, but I could find a onesie with Homer Simpson hiding in a bush. this is the state that we're at here. I mean, I can't find a denim shirt, but I can find that. Please tell me what's wrong with the world.
Brian, I like these guys think the high American fashion is the denims and flannels and hats, but then also the tracksuits.
I can imagine that's quite a shocking thing as well.
It is. Oh my God, that's too funny. Well, guys, thank you for getting on with us, James and Ross. Your new record, Sins and Virtues, March 29th, correct? March 29th, coming out everywhere. I'm going to give you guys a compliment before I throw it to Brian to close out the show. When I first heard your music, I had no idea you guys were British. So congratulations.
Thank you. That's the best compliment we've ever had. So thank you very much for that.
Brian?
Thank you so much to James and Ross from Ramblin' Preachers for being on the podcast. Had a great time chatting with you. Welcome back anytime. So thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you so much to James and Ross from Ramblin' Preachers for being on the podcast. Good to have another across the pond episode, and very cool for them to be on the first episode of this new, whatever I want to call, studio music room. So thanks to those guys. What a great conversation. And those guys know all the good music. They know all the good music from every era. They're wise beyond their years.
They love all the stuff that we love and the bands we promote, and they're cool and their music sounds great. And funny guys. That was actually a lot of fun talking to them. I haven't laughed that much since probably talking to Higby.
Sounds like you could broker a guitar deal too there for that TV yellow.
I can figure something out there. I might get some, lodging on a vacation or something if we do that.
Yeah. No, I'd like it's right wonder. Away. They
it's a very nice looking guitar.
I like right away when they mentioned. I mentioned them, Dirty Roses. They knew who they were, and they all these bands are lesser known that we try to promote. Those guys knew about them, so that's such a great thing.
It is for sure, and again, solidly they sound like a lot of the southern and blues rock based that stuff that we like. Two guitars, catchy hooks. It's good music. I'm really looking forward to this record coming out here and taking a listen to the whole album, because I have the first couple tracks so far.
Yeah. No, I've really enjoyed what I've heard so far from them, so I'm definitely super glad they came on.
They just need some monster trucks over there in a
That's great. He's pretends to be American in Costco.
I know that was just Target and Costco, like in monster
That's
trucks.
hilarious.
Love those guys. You know, can you get any better than Target monster trucks and Costco?
All right, man. Well, always remember, Southern rock is reverent, blues is blood. We'll see you next time.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.